Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Doug Tribou.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Zappos, eBay, Craigslist, Amazon, these were virtually meaningless words just 20 years ago. But on this day in 1995, the final restrictions against commercial traffic on the internet ended, and the world as we know it changed.
Even David Letterman spent a night asking Bill Gates, what's it all about?
What about this internet thing? Do you know anything about that?
Sure. Well, it's become a place where people are publishing information.
Right.
So everybody can have their own homepage. Companies are there. The latest information. It's wild what's going on.
Wild indeed. Everyone can have their own homepage. How quaint. Well, joining us now with more is Hiawatha Bray. He writes about technology for the business section of the Boston Globe, and he joins us regularly, to talk tech. Hiawatha, welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Okay, so 20 years ago today, the final restrictions on commercial traffic on the internet were removed. How did that open the floodgates?
Well, basically, the floodgates were already starting to open. I thought this was an interesting date to use as a jumping off point, but you got to remember, there's not any one date where you can say everything suddenly changed. For example, the year before was when a couple of guys at the University of Illinois created a program called Mosaic, and it was the first web browser to really catch on with the general public. And within a few months of it coming out, by early 1995, more and more people were starting to use the internet. But what happened was that 1995 was the year it hit critical mass. A horde of things happened at once. You had the final government privatization of the internet. That officially happened 20 years ago today. But you also had the founding of Amazon, eBay, Craigslist, Match.com, you had Microsoft creating its first browser, Internet Explorer, and you had Netscape, which was the company that grew out of Mosaic, going public, the first great dot-com boom thing. They go public, they're not even profitable, and at the end of one day, they're worth $2 billion, and everything went nuts. In 1995, about 16 million people worldwide knew about the internet and were using it. That's like half of 1% of the planet's population. Today, 40% of the planet is using it.
So let's talk a little bit more about that, because looking ahead to the next 20 years, I mean, you know, given, what is it, Moore's Law, I really doubt it's going to take 20 years to get the rest of the planet wired.
Well, it's happening at an ever faster rate, actually. One of the people I talked to for my article was a guy I interviewed in Africa, in Ghana, 14 years ago, Ni Quaynor. Back then, if you wanted to get the internet, you had to use satellites, which, by the way, are extremely expensive and very slow. But they didn't have connections to the rest of the world back then. And since then, there are now 5 undersea cables plugged into Ghana alone, bringing in internet data. The big problem now for Africa is getting wires stretched across the land all over the continent and setting up microwave towers for high speed and setting up things like 4G internet. But it's starting to happen now. So you got about 20% of Ghana is online now, and little by little, the rest of the continent's going to get hooked up. And that's one of the next big things, getting the rest of the world plugged in, and that's starting to happen.
Rest of the world in terms of actual human beings, but
you also
talk
Africa,
about
Asia,
things.
Latin America. Yes.
Yeah, you also talk about the internet of things and how the rest of our physical world is going to be hooked up very, very soon.
It's amazing, and it's also a little scary, because the Internet of Things is basically based on the fact that computers and radios and sensors are now so cheap that you can basically embed an intelligent network-connected computer into almost anything. And that's what's going to happen. You're going to see them plugged into virtually everything. And they'll all be talking to each other behind our backs, and we won't even know what they're saying. And the potential is huge. I mean, all kinds of things like your car, basically, you know, self-driving cars and things like that people are starting to talk about. But it also raises immense dangers. We've now had personal computers for over 30 years, and we haven't figured out how to keep them secure. What happens when your doorknob is a computer? What happens when your chair is a computer, and so on? Each one of them will be a target for hackers, and we'll have to secure every single one. And I talked to a bunch of experts who thinks we don't know how.
Okay.
We really don't know how.
So Hiawatha, let's talk about this, because the experts that you talk to, they sort of represent the spectrum from sunny optimism to very, very gloomy pessimism regarding a key question here about, you know, do we know how to wire these things? Do we know what the impact is going to be? And do we know about, you know, the major impact on privacy? I mean, as you point out in your piece in today's Globe, like, it seems on the average person kind of does what's an emoticon for meh. when it comes to privacy.
Exactly. But in a sense, they have a point because it's such an overwhelming problem. We're not really sure how to grapple with it. But on the other hand, I talked to a guy like Richard Stallman, who basically is one of the inventors of modern free software that led to the whole open source movement. He's one of the inventors of Linux, that hugely popular operating system. He doesn't have a smartphone or a dumb phone. He refuses to use mobile phones at all because he doesn't want to be tracked. And he's absolutely right. As long as you've got one of those things, they can track you. And one of the consequences of that are things we just don't know how to control about how we keep governments and businesses from constantly keeping tabs on us. Mm. And, of course, there's also the question, how do you keep criminals from breaking into these things? I mean, I talked to the inventor of Ethernet. You know, those cables you plug into your computer that allow you to talk to the network? Well, one of the key guys who invented it, he just basically says, look, we're just going to have to live with it. Nobody is going to be able to solve these problems completely. Let's just figure out how we can live with it and fix it as we go. Other people I talked to, for example, I talked to Dave Farber, who's a former chief technologist at the FCC, and he said, you know what, we got to take critical systems offline. We got to start disconnecting our electrical grid and our water system and stuff like that because we don't know how to secure them. And if we have the Internet of Things and everything's talking to all these devices, one of these days somebody's going to hack into a water meter, for example, and turn off all the water all over the city of Boston. I mean, it sounds far-fetched, but
it doesn't actually to me. I mean,
people who know what they're talking about say we aren't completely capable of stopping that yet.
Yeah, all right. So, Hiawatha, we just got a minute to go here, and you have laid out what are some significant fears and concerns that people have about the Internet of the future 20 years from now. But I kind of sense that you're an undying optimist.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I could hardly wait for it. The benefits of this stuff are just amazing for health and safety and the growth of our economy, even though the shocks that they're going to bring about are absolutely stunning. I just got through reading an amazing piece about the implications, for example, of networked self-driving vehicles. It's going to kill millions of jobs, but it's also going to completely eliminate much of our pollution problem. It's going to eliminate traffic. It's going to dramatically give us a happier, simpler life in many ways for those who can afford to pay for it because they'll be out of work. The whole oil industry, the whole auto industry, much of the steel industry, the whole truck driving industry, all these things are likely to be dead in 20 years because of these connected devices. And nobody's ready yet. But a lot of it's going to be wonderful.
Hiawatha Bray writes about technology for the Boston Globe and joins us to talk tech here on Radio Boston. Hiawatha, thanks as always.
Hey, it's been fun.